Harper Audio presents The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. Performed by Bonnie Turpin. Part 1. When it happens. 1. I shouldn't have come to this party. I'm not even sure I belong at this party. That's not on some bougie shit either. There are just some places where it's not enough to be me. Either version of me. Big D's spring break party is one of those places. I squeeze through sweaty bodies and follow Kenya, her curls bouncing past her shoulders. A haze lingers over the room, smelling like weed, and music rattles the floor. Some rapper calls out for everybody to nay-nay, followed by a bunch of haze as people launch into their own versions. Kenya holds up her cup and dances her way through the crowd. Between the headache from the loud-ass music and the nausea from the weed odor, I'll be amazed if I cross the room without spilling my drink. We break out the crowd. Big D's house is packed wall to wall. I've always heard that everybody and their mama comes to his spring break parties. Well, everybody except me. But damn, I didn't know it would be this many people. Girls wear their hair colored, curled, laid and slayed. Got me feeling basic as hell with my ponytail. Guys in their freshest kicks and sagging pants grind so close to girls they just about need condoms. My nana likes to say that spring brings love. Spring in Garden Heights doesn't always bring love, but it promises babies in the winter. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of them are conceived the night of Big D's party. He always has it on the Friday of spring break because you need Saturday to recover and Sunday to repent. Stop following me and go dance, star, Kenya says. People already say you think you all that. I didn't know so many mind readers lived in Garden Heights, or that people know me as anything other than Big Mav's daughter who works in the store. I sip my drink and spit it back out. I knew there would be more than Hawaiian punch in it, but this is way stronger than I'm used to. They shouldn't even call it punch, just straight up liquor. I put it on the coffee table and say, folks kill me thinking they know what I think. Hey, I'm just saying, you act like you don't know nobody because you go to that school. I've been hearing that for 6 years, ever since my parents put me in Williamson Prep. Whatever, I mumble. And it wouldn't kill you not to dress like... She turns up her nose as she looks from my sneakers to my oversized hoodie. That. Ain't that my brother's hoodie? Our brother's hoodie. Kenya and I share an older brother, 7. But she and I aren't related. Her mama is 7's mama, and my dad is 7's dad. Crazy, I know. Yeah, it's his. Figures. You know what else people saying, too? Got folks thinking you're my girlfriend. Do I look like I care what people think? No, and that's the problem. Whatever. If I'd known following her to this party meant she'd be on some extreme makeover, star edition mess, I would have stayed home and watched Fresh Prince reruns. My Jordans are comfortable, and damn, they're new. That's more than some people can say. The hoodie's way too big, but I like it that way. Plus, if I pull it over my nose, I can't smell the weed. Well, I ain't babysitting you all night, so you better do something, Kenya says and scopes the room. Kenya could be a model, if I'm completely honest. She's got flawless dark brown skin. I don't think she ever gets a pimple. Slanted brown eyes and long eyelashes that aren't store-bought. She's the perfect height for modeling, too, but a little thicker than those toothpicks on the runway. She never wears the same outfit twice. Her daddy, King, makes sure of that. Kenya is about the only person I hang out with in Garden Heights. It's hard to make friends when you go to a school that's 45 minutes away and you're a latchkey kid who's only seen at her family's store. It's easy to hang out with Kenya because of our connection to Seven. She's messy as hell sometimes, though. Always fighting somebody and quick to say her daddy will whoop somebody's ass. Yeah, it's true, but I wish she'd stop picking fights so she can use her trump card. Hell, I could use mine, too. Everybody knows you don't mess with my dad, Big Mav, and you definitely don't mess with his kids. Still, you don't see me going around starting shit. Like at Big D's party, Kenya is giving Dinesia Allen some serious stank eye. I don't remember much about Dinesia, but I remember that she and Kenya haven't liked each other since fourth grade. Tonight, Dinesia's dancing with some guy halfway across the room and paying no attention to Kenya. But no matter where we move, Kenya spots Dinesia and glares at her. And the thing about the stank eye is at some point you feel it on you, inviting you to kick some ass or have your ass kicked. Oh, I can't stand her, Kenya seethes. The other day, we were in line in the cafeteria, right? And she behind me talking out the side of her neck. She didn't use my name, but I know she was talking about me, saying I tried to get with Devante. For real? I say what I'm supposed to. Uh-huh, I don't want him. I know. Honestly, I don't know who Devante is. So what did you do? What you think I did? I turned around and asked if she had a problem with me. Old Trick gonna say, I wasn't even talking about you. Knowing she was. You're so lucky you go to that white people school and don't have to deal with hoes like that. Ain't this some shit? Not even 5 minutes ago, I was stuck up because I go to Williamson. Now I'm lucky? Trust me, my school has hoes too. Hold'em is universal. Watch, we gon' handle her tonight. Kenya's stank eye reaches its highest level of stank. Dinesia feels its sting and looks right at Kenya. Uh-huh, Kenya confirms, like Dinesia hears her. Watch. Hold up, we? That's why you begged me to come to this party? So you can have a tag team partner? She has the nerve to look offended. It ain't like you had nothing else to do. Or anybody else to hang out with. I'm doing your ass a favor. Really, Kenya? You do know I have friends, right? She rolls her eyes, hard. Only the whites are visible for a few seconds. Them little bougie girls from your school don't count. They're not bougie, and they do count, I think. Maya and I are cool. Not sure what's up with me and Haley lately. And honestly, if pulling me into a fight is your way of helping my social life, I'm good. God damn, it's always some drama with you. Please, Star. She stretches the please extra long. Too long. This is what I'm thinking. We wait until she get away from Devante, right? And then we... My phone vibrates against my thigh, and I glance at the screen. Since I've ignored his calls, Chris texts me instead. Can we talk? I didn't mean for it to go like that. Of course he didn't. He meant for it to go a whole different way yesterday, which is the problem. I slip the phone in my pocket. I'm not sure what I want to say, but I'd rather deal with him later. Kenya! Somebody shouts. This big light-skinned girl with bone-straight hair moves through the crowd toward us. A tall boy with a black and blonde frohawk follows her. They both give Kenya hugs and talk about how cute she looks. I'm not even here.
Why you ain't tell me you was coming?
The girl says and sticks her thumb in her mouth. She's got an overbite from doing that, too.
You could have rode with us.
Nah, girl, I had to go get Star. Kenya says, we walked here together. That's when they notice me, standing not even half a foot from Kenya. The guy squints as he gives me a quick once-over. He frowns for a hot second, but I notice it.
Ain't you Big Mav's daughter who work in the store?
See? People act like that's the name on my birth certificate. Yeah, that's me.
Oh, the girl says, I knew you looked familiar. We were in third grade together, Miss Bridges' class. I sat behind you.
Oh, I know this is the moment I'm supposed to remember her, but I don't. I guess Kenya was right. I really don't know anybody. Their faces are familiar, but you don't get names and life stories when you're bagging folks' groceries. I can lie, though.
Yeah, I remember you.
Girl, quit lying, the guy says. You know you don't know her ass.
Why you always lying? Kenya and the girl sing together.
The guy joins in, and they all bust out laughing.
Bianca and Chance, be nice, Kenya says. This star's first party. Her folks don't let her go nowhere.
I cut her a side eye. I go to parties, Kenya.
Have y'all seen her at any parties around here?
Kenya asks them.
Nope.
Point made. And before you say it, little lame white kid suburb parties don't count.
Chance and Bianca snicker. Damn, I wish this hoodie could swallow me up somehow.
I bet they be doing Molly and shit, don't they? Chance asks me. White kids love popping pills.
And listening to Taylor Swift,
Bianca adds, talking around her thumb. Okay, that's somewhat true, but I'm not telling them that.
Nah, actually, their parties are pretty dope, I say. One time this boy had J. Cole perform at his birthday party.
Damn, for real? Chance asks. Shit. Bitch, next time invite me. I'll party with them white kids.
Anyway, Kenya says loudly, we were talking about running up on Danasia. Bitch over there dancing with Devontae.
Oh, trick, Bianca says. You know she been running her mouth about you, right?
I was in Mr. Donald's class last week when Aaliyah told me.
Chance rolls his eyes.
Ugh, Mr. Donald.
You just mad he threw you out, Kenya says.
Hell yes.
Anyway, Aaliyah told me, Bianca begins.
I get lost again as classmates and teachers that I don't know are discussed. I can't say anything. Doesn't matter, though. I'm invisible. I feel like that a lot around here.
In the middle of them complaining about Danasia and their teachers, Kenya says something about getting another drink, and the three of them walk off without me.
Suddenly, I'm Eve in the garden after she ate the fruit. It's like I realize I'm naked. I'm by myself at a party I'm not even supposed to be at, where I barely know anybody, and the person I do know just left me hanging.
Kenya begged me to come to this party for weeks. I knew I'd be uncomfortable as hell, but every time I told Kenya no, she said I act like I'm too good for a garden party. I got tired of hearing that shit and decided to prove her wrong. Problem is, it would have taken Black Jesus to convince my parents to let me come. Now, Black Jesus will have to save me if they find out I'm here. People glance over at me with that, who is this chick standing against the wall by herself like an idiot, look. I slip my hands into my pockets. As long as I play it cool and keep to myself, I should be fine. The ironic thing is, though, at Williamson, I don't have to play it cool. I'm cool by default because I'm one of the only Black kids there. I have to earn coolness in Garden Heights, and that's more difficult than buying retro Jordans on release day. Funny how it works with white kids, though. It's dope to be Black until it's hard to be Black.
Star,
a familiar voice says. The sea of people parts for him, like he's a brown-skinned Moses. Guys give him daps and girls crane their necks to look at him. He smiles at me, and his dimples ruin any G persona he has. Khalil is fine, no other way of putting it. And I used to take baths with him. Not like that,
But way back in the day when we would giggle because he had a wee-wee and I had what his grandma called a wee-ha. I swear it wasn't perverted, though. He hugs me, smelling like soap and baby powder.
What's up, girl? Ain't seen you in a minute.
He lets me go.
You don't text nobody, nothing. Where you been?
School and the basketball team keep me busy, I say. But I'm always at the store. You're the one nobody sees anymore. His dimples disappear. He wipes his nose like he always does before a lie.
I've been busy.
Obviously. The brand new Jordans, the crisp white tee, the diamonds in his ears. When you grow up in Garden Heights, you know what busy really means.
Fuck.
I wish he wasn't that kind of busy, though. I don't know if I want to tear up or smack him. But the way Khalil looks at me with those hazel eyes makes it hard to be upset. I feel like I'm 10 again, standing in the basement of Christ Temple Church, having my first kiss with him at Vacation Bible School. Suddenly, I remember I'm in a hoodie, looking a straight-up mess, and that I actually have a boyfriend. I might not be answering Chris's calls or texts right now, but he's still mine, and I want to keep it that way. How's your grandma? I ask. And Cameron?
They aight. Grandma's sick, though.
Khalil sips from his cup.
Doctors say she got cancer or whatever.
Damn. Sorry, Kay.
Yeah. She taking chemo. She only worried about getting a wig, though.
He gives a weak laugh that doesn't show his dimples.
She'll be aight.
It's a prayer more than a prophecy. Is your mama helping with Cameron?
Good old Star. Always looking for the best in people. You know she ain't helping.
Hey, it was just a question. She came in the store the other day. She looks better.
For now, says Khalil. She claims she's trying to get clean, but it's the usual. She'll go clean a few weeks, decide she wants one more hit, then be back at it. But like I said, I'm good. Cameron's good. Grandma's good. He shrugs. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I say. But I remember the nights I spent with Khalil on his porch, waiting for his mama to come home. Whether he likes it or not, she matters to him too. The music changes, and Drake raps from the speakers. I nod to the beat and rap along under my breath. Everybody on the dance floor yells out the "started from the bottom, now we're here" part. Some days we are at the bottom in Garden Heights, but we still share the feeling that, damn, it could be worse. Khalil is watching me. A smile tries to form on his lips, but he shakes his head.
Can't believe you still love whiny-ass Drake.
I gape at him. Leave my husband alone.
Your corny husband. Baby, you my everything. You all I ever wanted,
Khalil sings in a whiny voice. I push him with my shoulder and he laughs, his drink splashing over the sides of the cup.
You know that's what he sounds like.
I flip him off. He puckers his lips and makes a kissing sound. All these months apart, and we've fallen back into normal like it's nothing. Khalil grabs a napkin from the coffee table and wipes drink off his Jordans, the three retros. They came out a few years ago, but I swear those things are so fresh. They cost about $300, and that's if you find somebody on eBay who goes easy. Chris did. I got mine for a steal at $150, but I wear kid sizes. Thanks to my small feet, Chris and I can match our sneakers. Yes. We're that couple. Shit, we're fly, though. If he can stop doing stupid stuff, we'll really be good. I like the kicks, I tell Khalil.
Thanks.
He scrubs the shoes with his napkin. I cringe. With each hard rub, the shoes cry for my help. No lie, every time a sneaker is cleaned improperly,
a kitten dies. Khalil, I say, 1 second away from snatching that napkin. Either wipe gently back and forth or dab. Don't scrub. For real. He looks up at me smirking.
Okay, Miss Sneakerhead.
And thank Black Jesus, he dabs.
Since you made me spill my drink on them, I ought to make you clean them.
It'll cost you $60.
$60?
He shouts, straightening up. Hell yeah, and it would be $80 if they had icy soles. Clear bottoms are a bitch to clean. Cleaning kits aren't cheap. Besides, you're obviously making big money if you can buy those. Khalil sips his drink like I didn't say anything, mutters, damn, this shit's strong, and sets the cup on the coffee table.
Hey, tell your pops I need to holler at him soon. Some stuff going down that I need to talk to him about.
What kind of stuff?
Grown folks' business.
Yeah, 'cause you're so grown.
5 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days older than you.
He winks.
I ain't forgot.
A commotion stirs in the middle of the dance floor. Voices argue louder than the music. Cuss words fly left and right. My first thought, Kenya walked up on Dinesha like she promised. But the voices are deeper than theirs.
Pop!
A shot rings out. I duck.
Pop!
A second shot. The crowd stampedes toward the door, which leads to more cussing and fighting since it's impossible for everybody to get out at once. Khalil grabs my hand.
Come on.
There are way too many people and way too much curly hair for me to catch a glimpse of Kenya. But Kenya!
Forget her. Let's go.
He pulls me through the crowd, shoving people out our way and stepping on shoes. That alone could get us some bullets. I look for Kenya among the panicked faces, but still no sign of her. I don't try to see who got shot or who did it. You can't snitch if you don't know anything. Cars speed away outside, and people run into the night in any direction where shots aren't firing off. Khalil leads me to a Chevy Impala parked under a dim streetlight. He pushes me in through the driver's side, and I climb into the passenger seat. We screech off, leaving chaos in the rearview mirror.
Always some shit, he mumbles. Can't have a party without somebody getting shot.
He sounds like my parents. That's exactly why they don't let me go nowhere, as Kenya puts it. At least not around Garden Heights. I send Kenya a text, hoping she's all right. Doubt those bullets were meant for her, but bullets go where they want to go. Kenya texts back, kind of quick.
I'm fine. I see that bitch, though, about to handle her ass. Where you at?
Is this chick for real? We just ran for our lives, and she's ready to fight?
I don't even answer that dumb shit. Khalil's Impala is nice. Not all flashy like some guys' cars. I didn't see any rims before I got in, and the front seat has cracks in the leather. But the interior is a tacky lime green, so it's been customized at some point. I pick at a crack in the seat. Who you think got shot? Khalil gets his hairbrush out the compartment on the door.
Probably a king lord,
he says, brushing the sides of his fade.
Some garden disciples came in when I got there. Something was bound to pop off.
I nod. Garden Heights has been a battlefield for the past 2 months over some stupid territory wars. I was born a queen, 'cause daddy used to be a king lord. But when he left the game, my street royalty status ended. But even if I'd grown up in it, I wouldn't understand fighting over streets nobody owns. Khalil drops the brush in the door and cranks up his stereo, blasting an old rap song daddy has played a million times. I frown. Why you always listening to that old stuff?
Man, get out of here. Tupac was the truth.
Yeah, 20 years ago.
Nah, even now. Like, check this.
He points at me, which means he's about to go into one of his Khalil philosophical moments.
Pac said Thug Life stood for the hate you give little infants fucks everybody.
I raised my eyebrows.
What? Listen. The hate you, the letter U, give little infants fucks everybody. THUGLIFE. Meaning what society gives us as youth, it bites them in the ass when we wild out. Get it?
Damn. Yeah.
See? Told you he was relevant.
He nods to the beat and raps along. But now I'm wondering what he's doing to fuck everybody. As much as I think I know, I hope I'm wrong. I need to hear it from him.
So why have you really been busy?
I ask. A few months ago, Daddy said you quit the store. I haven't seen you since.
He scoots closer to the steering wheel. Where you want me to take you, your house or the store?
Khalil.
Your house or the store?
If you're selling that stuff.
Mind your business, star. Don't worry about me, I'm doing what I gotta do.
Bullshit, you know my dad would help you out.
He wipes his nose before his lie. I don't need help from nobody, okay? And that little minimum wage job your pops gave me didn't make nothing happen. I got tired of choosing between lights and food.
I thought your grandma was working.
She was. When she got sick, them clowns at the hospital claimed they'd work with her. 2 months later, she wasn't pulling her load on the job, because when you're going through chemo, you can't pull big-ass garbage bins around. They fired her. He shakes his head. Funny, huh? The hospital fired her because she was sick.
It's silent in the Impala except for Tupac asking, who do you believe in? I don't know. My phone vibrates again, probably either Chris asking for forgiveness or Kenya asking for backup against Dinesia. Instead, my big brother's all caps texts appear on the screen. I don't know why he does that. He probably thinks it intimidates me. Really, it annoys the hell out of me.
Where are you? You and Kenya better not be at that party. I heard somebody got shot.
The only thing worse than protective parents is protective older brothers. Even Black Jesus can't save me from Seven. Khalil glances over at me.
Seven, huh?
How'd you know?
'Cause you always look like you want to punch something when he talks to you. Remember that time at your birthday party when he kept telling you what to wish for?
And I popped him in his mouth.
Then, Natasha got mad at you for telling her boyfriend to shut up,
Khalil says, laughing. I roll my eyes. She got on my nerves with her crush on Seven. Half the time, I thought she came over just to see him.
Nah, it was because you had the Harry Potter movies. What we used to call ourselves? The Hood Trio? Tighter than...
The inside of Voldemort's nose. We were so silly for that.
I know, right? He says.
We laugh, but something's missing from it. Someone's missing from it. Natasha. Khalil looks at the road.
Crazy, it's been 6 years, you know?
A whoop whoop sound startles us, and blue lights flash in the rearview mirror. 2. When I was 12, my parents had two talks with me. One was the usual birds and bees. Well, I didn't really get the usual version. My mom, Lisa, is a registered nurse, and she told me what went where and what didn't need to go here, there, or any damn where till I'm grown. Back then, I doubted anything was going anywhere anyway. While all the other girls sprouted breasts between 6th and 7th grade, my chest was as flat as my back. The other talk was about what to do if a cop stopped me. Mama fussed and told Daddy I was too young for that. He argued that I wasn't too young to get arrested or shot.
Star, you do whatever they tell you to do, he said,
Keep your hands visible. Don't make any sudden moves. Only speak when they speak to you.
I knew it must have been serious. Daddy has the biggest mouth of anybody I know, and if he said to be quiet, I needed to be quiet. I hope somebody had the talk with Khalil. He cusses under his breath, turns Tupac down, and maneuvers the Impala to the side of the street. We're on Carnation, where most of the houses are abandoned and half the streetlights are busted. Nobody around but us and the cop. Khalil turns the ignition off.
Wonder what this fool wants.
The officer parks and puts his brights on. I blink to keep from being blinded. I remember something else Daddy said.
If you're with somebody, you better hope they don't have nothing on them, or both of y'all going down.
Kay, you don't have anything in the car, do you? I ask. He watches the cop in his side mirror.
Nah.
The officer approaches the driver's door and taps the window. Khalil cranks the handle to roll it down. As if we aren't blinded enough, the officer beams his flashlight in our faces.
License, registration, and proof of insurance.
Khalil breaks a rule. He doesn't do what the cop wants.
What you pull us over for? License, registration, and proof of insurance. I said what you pull us over for.
Khalil, I plead, do what he said. Khalil groans and takes his wallet out. The officer follows his movements with the flashlight. My heart pounds loudly, but Daddy's instructions echo in my head.
Get a good look at the cop's face. If you can remember his badge number, that's even better.
With the flashlight following Khalil's hands, I make out the numbers on the badge, 115. He's white, mid-30s to early 40s, has a brown buzz cut and a thin scar over his top lip. Khalil hands the officer his papers and license. 115 looks over them.
Where are you two coming from tonight? Nunya,
Khalil says, meaning none of your business.
What you pull me over for? Your taillight's broken. So are you gonna give me a ticket or what?
Khalil asks.
You know what? Get out the car, smart guy. Man, just give me my ticket. Get out the car! Hands up where I can see them.
Khalil gets out with his hands up. 115 yanks him by his arm and pins him against the back door. I fight to find my voice.
He didn't mean... Hands on the dashboard!
The officer barks at me.
Don't move!
I do what he tells me, but my hands are shaking too much to be still. He pats Khalil down.
Okay, smart mouth. Let's see what we find on you today.
You ain't gonna find nothing,
Khalil says. 115 pats him down two more times. He turns up empty.
Stay here, he tells Khalil. And you.
He looks in the window at me.
Don't move.
I can't even nod. The officer walks back to his patrol car. My parents haven't raised me to fear the police, just to be smart around them. They told me it's not smart to move while a cop has his back to you. Khalil does. He comes to his door. It's not smart to make a sudden move. Khalil does. He opens the driver's door.
You okay, Star? Pow!
One. Khalil's body jerks. Blood splatters from his back. He holds on to the door to keep himself upright.
Pow!
Two. Khalil gasps.
Pow!
Three. Khalil looks at me, stunned. He falls to the ground. I'm 10 again, watching Natasha drop. An ear-splitting scream emerges from my gut, explodes in my throat, and uses every inch of me
to be heard. Instinct says don't move, but everything else says check on Khalil. I jump out the Impala and rush around to the other side. Khalil stares at the sky as if he hopes to see God. His mouth is open like he wants to scream. I scream loud enough for the both of us. No, no, no! Is all I can say. Like I'm a year old and it's the only word I know. I'm not sure how I end up on the ground next to him. My mom once said that if someone gets shot, try to stop the bleeding. But there's so much blood. Too much blood. No! 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 Khalil doesn't move. He doesn't utter a word. He doesn't even look at me. His body stiffens, and he's gone. I hope he sees God. Someone else screams. I blink through my tears. Officer 115 yells at me, pointing the same gun he killed my friend with. I put my hands up. 3. They leave Khalil's body in the street like it's an exhibit. Police cars and ambulances flash all along Carnation Street. People stand off to the side trying to see what happened.
Damn, bruh, some guy says. They killed him.
The police tell the crowd to leave. Nobody listens. The paramedics can't do shit for Khalil, so they put me in the back of an ambulance like I need help. The bright lights spotlight me, and people crane their necks to get a peek. I don't feel special. I feel sick. The cops rummage through Khalil's car. I try to tell them to stop. Please cover his body. Please close his eyes. Please close his mouth. Get away from his car. Don't pick up his hairbrush. But the words never come out. 115 sits on the sidewalk with his face buried in his hands. Other officers pat his shoulder and tell him it'll be okay. They finally put a sheet over Khalil. He can't breathe under it. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. I gasp and gasp. And gasp.
Star?
Brown eyes with long eyelashes appear in front of me. They're like mine. I couldn't say much to the cops, but I did manage to give them my parents' names and phone numbers.
Hey, Daddy says. Come on, let's go.
I open my mouth to respond. A sob comes out. Daddy is moved aside, and Mama wraps her arms around me. She rubs my back and speaks in hushed tones that tell lies. It's all right, baby. It's all right. We stay this way for a long time. Eventually, Daddy helps us out the ambulance. He wraps his arm around me like a shield against curious eyes and guides me to his Tahoe down the street. He drives. A street light flashes across his face, revealing how tight his jaw is set. His veins bulge along his bald head. Mama's wearing her scrubs, the ones with the rubber ducks on them. She did an extra shift at the emergency room tonight. She wipes her eyes a few times, probably thinking about Khalil, or how that could have been me lying in the street. My stomach twists. All of that blood. And it came out of him. Some of it is on my hands. On Seven's hoodie. On my sneakers. An hour ago we were laughing and catching up. Now his blood. Hot spit pools in my mouth. My stomach twists tighter. I gag. Mama glances at me in the rearview mirror. Maverick, pull over. I throw myself across the back seat and push the door open before the truck comes to a complete stop. It feels like everything in me is coming out, and all I can do is let it. Mama hops out and runs around to me. She holds my hair out the way and rubs my back. I'm so sorry, baby, she says. When we get home, she helps me undress. Seven's hoodie and my Jordans disappear into a black trash bag, and I never see them again. I sit in a tub of steaming water and scrub my hands raw to get Khalil's blood off. Daddy carries me to bed, and Mama brushes her fingers through my hair until I fall asleep. Nightmares wake me over and over again. Mama reminds me to breathe the same way she did before I outgrew asthma. I think she stays in my room the whole night, 'cause every time I wake up, she's sitting on my bed. But this time she's gone. My eyes strain against the brightness of my neon blue walls. The clock says it's 5 in the morning. My body's so used to waking up at 5, it doesn't care if it's Saturday morning or not. I stare at the glow-in-the-dark stars on my ceiling, trying to recap the night before. The party flashes in my mind. The fight. 1:15 pulling me and Khalil over. The first shot rings in my ears. The second. The third. I'm lying in bed. Khalil is lying in the county morgue. That's where Natasha ended up, too. It happened 6 years ago, but I still remember everything from that day. I was sweeping floors at our grocery store, saving up for my first pair of J's, when Natasha ran in. She was chunky, her mama told her it was baby fat, dark-skinned, and wore her hair in braids that always looked freshly done. I wanted braids like hers so bad.
Star, the hydrant on Elm Street busted, she said.
That was like saying we had a free water park. I remember looking at Daddy and pleading silently. He said I could go, as long as I promised to be back in an hour. I don't think I ever saw the water shoot as high as it did that day. Almost everybody in the neighborhood was there, too, just having fun. I was the only one who noticed the car at first. A tattooed arm stretched out the back window, holding a Glock. People ran. Not me, though. My feet became part of the sidewalk. Natasha was splashing in the water, all happy and stuff. Then, pow, pow, pow! I dove into a rose bush. By the time I got up, somebody was yelling, call 911. At first, I thought it was me, 'cause I had blood on my shirt. The thorns on the rose bush got me, that's all. It was Natasha, though. Her blood mixed in with the water, and all you could see was a red river flowing down the street. She looked scared. We were 10. We didn't know what happened after you died. Hell, I still don't know. And she was forced to find out, even if she didn't want to find out. I know she didn't. Just like Khalil didn't. My door creaks open and Mama peeks in. She tries to smile. Look who's up. She sinks onto her spot on the bed and touches my forehead, even though I don't have a fever. She takes care of sick kids so much that it's her first instinct. How you feeling, Munch? That nickname. My parents claim I was always munching on something from the moment I got off the bottle. I've lost my big appetite, but I can't lose that nickname. Tired, I say. My voice has extra bass in it. I want to stay in bed.
I know, baby, but I don't want you here by yourself. That's all I want to be, by myself. She stares at me, but it feels like she's looking at who I used to be. Her little girl with ponytails and a snaggle tooth who swore she was a Powerpuff Girl. It's weird, but also kind of like a blanket I want to get wrapped up in. I love you, she says. I love you too. She stands and holds her hand out. Come on, let's get you something to eat. We walk slowly to the kitchen. Black Jesus hangs from the cross in a painting on the hallway wall, and Malcolm X holds a shotgun in a photograph next to him. Nana still complains about those pictures hanging next to each other. We live in her old house. She gave it to my parents after my Uncle Carlos moved her into his humongous house in the suburbs. Uncle Carlos was always uneasy about Nana living by herself in Garden Heights, especially since break-ins and robberies seem to happen more to older folks than anybody. Nana doesn't think she's old, though. She refused to leave, talking about how it was her home and no thugs were gonna run her out, not even when somebody broke in and stole her television. About a month after that, Uncle Carlos claimed that he and Aunt Pam needed her help with their kids. Since, according to Nana, Aunt Pam can't cook worth a damn for those poor babies, she finally agreed to move. Our house hasn't lost its Nana-ness, though, with its permanent odor of potpourri, flowered wallpaper, and hints of pink in almost every room. Daddy and Seven are talking before we get to the kitchen. They go silent as soon as we walk in.
Morning, baby girl.
Daddy gets up from the table and kisses my forehead.
You sleep okay?
Yeah, I lie, as he guides me to a seat. Seven just stares. Mama opens the fridge, the door crowded with takeout menus and fruit-shaped magnets. All right, Munch, she says. You want turkey bacon or regular? Regular? I'm surprised I have an option. We never have pork. We aren't Muslims. More like Christlums. Mama became a member of Christ Temple Church when she was in Nana's belly. Daddy believes in Black Jesus, but follows the Black Panthers' 10-point program more than the Ten Commandments. He agrees with the Nation of Islam on some stuff, but he can't get over the fact that they may have killed Malcolm X.
Pig in my house. Daddy grumbles and sits next to me.
Seven smirks across from him. Seven and Daddy look like one of those age progression pictures they show when somebody's been missing a long time. Throw my little brother Sikani in there, and you have the same person at 8, 17, and 36. They're dark brown, slender, and have thick eyebrows and long eyelashes that almost look feminine. Seven's dreads are long enough to give both bald-headed Daddy and short-haired Sikani each a head full of hair. As for me, it's as if God mixed my parents' skin tones in a paint bucket to get my medium brown complexion. I did inherit Daddy's eyelashes, and I'm cursed with his eyebrows, too. Otherwise, I'm mostly my mom, with big brown eyes and a little too much forehead. Mama passes behind Seven with the bacon and squeezes his shoulder. Thank you for staying with your brother last night so we could... Her voice catches, but the reminder of what happened hangs in the air. She clears her throat. We appreciate it.
No problem. I needed to get out the house. King spent the night, Daddy asks. More like moved in. Aisha talking about they can be a family. Hey, Daddy says, that's your mama, boy. Don't be calling her by her name like you grown.
Somebody in that house needs to be grown, Mama says. She takes a skillet out and hollers down the hall. Sikani, I'm not telling you again. If you want to go to Carlos's for the weekend, you better get up. You're not going to have me late for work. I guess she's got to work a day shift to make up for last night.
Pops, You know what's gonna happen, Seven says. He'll beat her. She'll put him out. Then he'll come back saying he changed. Only difference is this time, I'm not letting him put his hands on me. You can always move in with us, says Daddy. I know, but I can't leave Kenya and Lyric. That fool's crazy enough to hit them too. He don't care that they're his daughters. Right, Daddy says. Don't say anything to him. If he puts his hands on you, let me handle that.
Seven nods, then looks at me. He opens his mouth and keeps it open a while before saying,
I'm sorry about last night, Star.
Somebody finally acknowledges the cloud hanging over the kitchen, which for some reason is like acknowledging me. Thanks, I say. Even though it's weird saying that, I don't deserve the sympathy. Khalil's family does. There's just the sound of bacon crackling and popping in the skillet. It's like a fragile stickers on my forehead, and instead of taking a chance and saying something that might break me, they'd rather say nothing at all. But the silence is the worst. I borrowed your hoodie, Seven, I mumble. It's random, but it's better than nothing. The blue one. Mama had to throw it away. Khalil's blood, I swallow. His blood got on it.
Oh.
That's all anybody says for a minute. Mama turns around to the skillet. Don't make any sense. That baby, she says thickly. He was just a baby. Daddy shakes his head.
That boy never hurt anybody. He didn't deserve that shit.
Why did they shoot him? Seven asks.
Was he a threat or something?
No, I say quietly. I stare at the table. I can feel all of them watching me again. He didn't do anything, I say. We didn't do anything. Khalil didn't even have a gun. Daddy releases a slow breath.
Folks around here gonna lose their minds when they find that out. People from the neighborhood are already talking about it on Twitter,
Seven says.
I saw it last night.
Did they mention your sister? Mama asks.
No, just RIP Khalil messages, fuck the police, stuff like that. I don't think they know details.
What's gonna happen to me when the details do come out? I ask. What do you mean, baby? My mom asks. Besides the cop, I'm the only person who was there. And you've seen stuff like this. It ends up on national news. People get death threats. Cops target them, all kinds of stuff.
I won't let anything happen to you, Daddy says. None of us will.
He looks at Mama and Seven.
We're not telling anybody that Star was there.
Should Sakani know?
Seven asks. No, Mama says. It's best if he didn't. We're just gonna be quiet for now. I've seen it happen over and over again. A black person gets killed just for being black, and all hell breaks loose. I've tweeted RIP hashtags, reblogged pictures on Tumblr, and signed every petition out there. I always said that if I saw it happen to somebody, I would have the loudest voice, making sure the world knew what went down. Now I am that person, and I'm too afraid to speak. I want to stay home and watch The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, my favorite show ever, hands down. I think I know every episode word for word. Yeah, it's hilarious, but it's also like seeing parts of my life on screen. I even relate to the theme song. A couple of gang members who were up to no good made trouble in my neighborhood and killed Natasha. My parents got scared, and although they didn't send me to my aunt and uncle in a rich neighborhood, they sent me to a bougie private school. I just wish I could be myself at Williamson, like Will was himself in Bel Air. I kind of want to stay home so I can return Chris's calls, too. After last night, it feels stupid to be mad at him. Or I could call Haley and Maya. Those girls Kenya claims don't count as my friends. I guess I can see why she says that. I never invite them over. Why would I? They live in many mansions. My house is just many. I made the mistake of inviting them to a sleepover in 7th grade. Mama was gonna let us do our nails, stay up all night, and eat as much pizza as we wanted. It was gonna be as awesome as those weekends we had at Haley's, the ones we still have sometimes. I invited Kenya, too, so I could finally hang out with all three of them at once. Haley didn't come. Her dad didn't want her spending the night in the ghetto. I overheard my parents say that. Maya came, but ended up asking her parents to come get her that night. There was a drive-by around the corner, and the gunshots scared her. That's when I realized Williamson is one world, and Garden Heights is another, and I have to keep them separate. It doesn't matter what I'm thinking about doing today, though. My parents have their own plans for me. Mama tells me I'm going to the store with Daddy. Before Seven leaves for work, he comes to my room in his Best Buy polo and khakis and hugs me.
Love you, he says.
See, that's why I hate it when somebody dies. People do stuff they wouldn't usually do. Even Mama hugs me longer and tighter with more sympathy than just because in it. Sakani, on the other hand, steals bacon off my plate, looks at my phone, and purposely steps on my foot on his way out. I love him for it. I bring a bowl of dog food and leftover bacon outside to our pit bull, Bricks. Daddy gave him his name, 'cause he's always been as heavy as some bricks. Soon as he sees me, he jumps and fights to break free from his chain. And when I get close enough, his hyper butt jumps up my legs, nearly taking me down. Get! I say. He crouches onto the grass and stares up at me, whimpering with wide puppy dog eyes, the Bricks version of an apology. I know pit bulls can be aggressive, but Bricks is a baby most of the time, a big baby. Now, if somebody tries to break in our house or something, they won't meet the baby Bricks. While I feed Bricks and refill his water bowl, Daddy picks bunches of collard greens from his garden. He cuts roses that have blooms as big as my palms. Daddy spends hours out here every night, planting, tilling, and talking. He claims a good garden needs good conversation. About 30 minutes later, we're riding in his truck with the windows down. On the radio, Marvin Gaye asks, "What's going on?" It's still dark out, though the sun peeks through the clouds, and hardly anybody is outside. This early in the morning, it's easy to hear the rumbling of 18-wheelers on the freeway. Daddy hums to Marvin, but he couldn't carry a tune if it came in a box. He's wearing a Lakers jersey and no shirt underneath, revealing tattoos all over his arms. One of my baby photos smiles back at me, permanently etched on his arm with "something to live for, something to die for" written beneath it. Seven and Sakani are on his other arm with the same words beneath them. Love letters in the simplest form.
"You want to talk about last night some more?"
he asks. "Nah."
"Aight. Whenever you want to."
Another love letter in the simplest form. We turn onto Marigold Avenue, where Garden Heights is waking up. Some ladies wearing floral headscarves come out the laundromat, carrying big baskets of clothes. Mr. Rubin unlocks the chains on his restaurant. His nephew, Tim, the cook, leans against the wall and wipes sleep from his eyes. Ms. Yvette yawns as she goes in her beauty shop. The lights are on at Top Shelf Spirits and Wine, but they're always on. Daddy parks in front of Carter's Grocery, our family store. Daddy bought it when I was 9, after the former owner, Mr. Wyatt, left Garden Heights to go sit on the beach all day, watching pretty women. Mr. Wyatt's words, not mine. Mr. Wyatt was the only person who would hire Daddy when he got out of prison, and he later said Daddy was the only person he trusted to run the store.
Compared to the Walmart on the east side of Garden Heights, our grocery is tiny. White painted metal bars protect the windows and door. They make the store resemble a jail. Mr. Lewis from the barbershop next door stands out front, his arms folded over his big belly. He sets his narrowed eyes on Daddy. Daddy sighs.
Here we go.
We hop out. Mr. Lewis gives some of the best haircuts in Garden Heights. Sakani's high top fade proves it, but Mr. Lewis himself wears an untidy afro. His stomach blocks his view of his feet, and since his wife passed, nobody tells him that his pants are too short and his socks don't always match. Today one is striped and the other is argyle.
The store used to open at 5:55 on the dot, he says. 5:55.
It's 6:05. Daddy unlocks the front door.
I know, Mr. Lewis, but I told you, I'm not running the store the same way Wyatt did.
It sure is obvious. First you take down his pictures. Who the hell replaces the picture of Dr. King with some nobody?
Huey Newton ain't a nobody.
He ain't Dr. King. Then you hire thugs to work up in here. I heard that Khalil boy got himself killed last night. He was probably selling that stuff.
Mr. Lewis looks from Daddy's basketball jersey to his tattoos.
Wonder where he get that idea from.
Daddy's jaw tightens.
Star, turn the coffee pot on for Mr. Lewis.
So he can get the hell out of here, I say to myself, finishing Daddy's sentence for him. I flick the switch on the coffee pot at the self-serve table, which Huey Newton watches over from a photograph, his fist raised for black power. I'm supposed to replace the filter and put new coffee and water in, but for talking about Khalil, Mr. Lewis gets coffee made from day-old grounds. He limps through the aisles and gets a honey bun, an apple, and a pack of hog head cheese. He gives me the honey bun.
Eat it up, girl, and you better not overcook it.
I leave it in the microwave until the plastic wrapper swells and pops open. Mr. Lewis eats it soon as I take it out.
That thing hot!
He chews and blows at the same time.
You heated it too long, girl! About to burn my mouth!
When Mr. Lewis leaves, Daddy winks at me. The usual customers come in, like Mrs. Jackson, who insists on buying her greens from Daddy and nobody else. Four red-eyed guys in sagging pants buy almost every bag of chips we have. Daddy tells them it's too early to be that blazed, and they laugh way too hard. One of them licks his next blunt as they leave. Around 11, Mrs. Rooks buys some roses and snacks for her bridge club meeting. She has droopy eyes and gold plating on her front teeth. Her wig is gold-colored, too.
Y'all need to get some lotto tickets up in here, baby,
she says as Daddy rings her up and I bag her stuff.
Tonight it's at 300 million.
Daddy smiles.
For real? What would you do with all that money, Mrs. Rooks?
Shit, baby. The question is what I wouldn't do with all that money. Lord knows I'd get on the first plane out of here.
Daddy laughs.
Is that right? Then who gonna make red velvet cakes for us?
Somebody else, 'cause I'd be gone.
She points to the display of cigarettes behind us.
Baby, hand me a pack of them Newports.
Those are Nana's favorites, too. They used to be Daddy's favorites before I begged him to quit. I grab a pack and pass it to Mrs. Rooks. She's staring at me moments after, patting the pack against her palm, and I wait for it. The sympathy.
Baby, I heard what happened to Rosalie's grandboy, she says. I'm so sorry. Y'all used to be friends, didn't you?
The used to stings, but I just say to Mrs. Rooks, yes, ma'am. She shakes her head.
Lord have mercy. My heart about broke when I heard. I tried to go over there and see Rosalie last night, but so many people were already at the house. Poor Rosalie. All she going through and now this. Barbara said Rosalie not sure how she gonna pay the burying. We talking about raising some money. Think you can help us out, Maverick?
Oh, yeah. Let me know what y'all need, and it's done.
She flashes those gold teeth in a smile.
Boy, it's good to see where the Lord done brought you. Your mama would be proud.
Daddy nods heavily. Grandma's been gone 10 years, long enough that Daddy doesn't cry every day. But such a short while ago that if someone brings her up, it brings him down.
And look at this girl, Mrs. Rooks says, eyeing me. Every bit of Lisa. Maverick, you better watch out. These little boys around here gonna be trying it.
Nah, they better watch out. You know I ain't having that. She can't date till she 40.
My hand drifts to my pocket, thinking of Chris and his texts. Shit, I left my phone at home. Needless to say, Daddy doesn't know a thing about Chris. We've been together over a year now. Seven knows, because he met Chris at school, and Mama figured it out when Chris would always visit me at Uncle Carlos's house, claiming he was my friend. One day, she and Uncle Carlos walked in on us kissing, and they pointed out that friends don't kiss each other like that. I've never seen Chris get so red in my life. She and Seven are okay with me dating Chris, although if it was up to Seven, I'd become a nun. But whatever. I can't get the guts to tell Daddy, though. And it's not just because he doesn't want me dating yet. The bigger issue is that Chris is white. At first, I thought my mom might say something about it, but she was like, he could be polka dot as long as he's not a criminal and he's treating you right. Daddy, on the other hand, rants about how Halle Berry act like she can't get with brothers anymore and how messed up that is. I mean, anytime he finds out a black person is with a white person, suddenly something's wrong with them. I don't want him looking at me like that. Luckily, Mama hasn't told him. She refuses to get in the middle of that fight. My boyfriend, my responsibility to tell Daddy. Mrs. Rooks leaves. Seconds later, the bell clangs. Kenya struts into the store. Her kicks are cute. Bazooka Joe Nike dunks that I haven't added to my collection. Kenya always wears fly sneakers. She goes to get her usual from the aisles. Hey, Star. Hey, Uncle Maverick.
Hey, Kenya,
Daddy answers, even though he's not her uncle, but her brother's dad.
You good?
She comes back with a jumbo bag of hot Cheetos and a Sprite.
Yeah, my mama wanna know if my brother spent the night with y'all.
There she goes calling Seven my brother, like she's the only one who can claim him. It's annoying as hell.
Tell your mama I'll call her later,
Daddy says.
Okay.
Kenya pays for her stuff and makes eye contact with me. She jerks her head a little to the side.
I'm gonna sweep the aisles, I tell Daddy.
Kenya follows me. I grab the broom and go to the produce aisle on the other side of the store. Some grapes have spilled out from those red-eyed guys sampling before buying. I barely start sweeping before Kenya starts talking.
I heard about Khalil, she says. I'm so sorry, Star. You okay?
I make myself nod.
I just can't believe it, you know? It had been a while since I saw him, but it hurts.
Kenya says what I can't.
Yeah. Fuck. I feel the tears coming. I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry.
I kinda hoped he'd be in here when I walked in, she says softly, like he used to be, bagging groceries in that ugly apron.
The green one, I mutter.
Yeah, talking about how women love a man in uniform.
I stare at the floor. If I cry now, I may never stop. Kenya pops her hot Cheetos open and holds the bag toward me. Comfort food. I reach in and get a couple.
Thanks.
No problem. We munch on Cheetos. Khalil's supposed to be here with us. So, I say, and my voice is all rough. You and Dinesia got into it last night?
Girl,
she sounds like she's been waiting to drop this story for hours. Devante came over to me right before it got crazy. He asked for my number.
I thought he was Dinesia's boyfriend.
Devante not the type to be tied down. Anyway, Dinesia walked over to start something, but the shots went off. We ended up running down the same street, and I clocked her ass. It was so funny. You should have seen it.
I would have rather seen that instead of Officer 115 or Khalil staring at the sky or all that blood. My stomach twists again.
Kenya waves her hand in front of me.
Hey, you okay?
I blink Khalil and that cop away.
Yeah, I'm good.
You sure? You real quiet.
Yeah.
She lets it drop, and I let her tell me about the second round she has planned for Dinesia. Daddy calls me up front. When I get there, he hands me a 20.
Give me some beef ribs from Reuben's, and I want
potato salad and fried okra, I say. That's what he always has on Saturdays. He kisses my cheek.
You know your daddy. Get whatever you want, baby.
Kenya follows me out the store. We wait for a car to pass, the music blasting and the driver reclined so far back that only the tip of his nose seems to nod to the song. We cross the street to Reuben's. The smoky aroma hits us on the sidewalk, and a blues song pours outside. Inside, the walls are covered with photographs of civil rights leaders, politicians, and celebrities who have eaten here, like James Brown and pre-heart bypass Bill Clinton. There's a picture of Dr. King and a much younger Mr. Reuben. A bulletproof partition separates the customers from the cashier. I fan myself after a few minutes in line. The air conditioner in the window stopped working months ago, and the smoker heats up the whole building. When we get to the front of the line, Mr. Reuben greets us with a gap-toothed smile from behind the partition.
Hey, Star and Kenya, how y'all doing?
Mr. Reuben is one of the only people around here who actually calls me by my name. He remembers everybody's name somehow. Hey, Mr. Reuben, I say. My daddy wants his usual. He writes it on a pad.
All right. Beefs, potato salad, okra. Y'all want fried barbecue wings and fries? And extra sauce for you, Star Baby?
He remembers everybody's usual orders, too, somehow. Yes, sir, we say.
All right. Y'all been staying out of trouble?
Yes, sir. Kenya lies with ease.
How about some pound cake on the house, then? Reward for good behavior.
We say yeah and thank him. But see, Mr. Reuben could know about Kenya's fight and would offer her pound cake regardless. He's nice like that. He gives kids free meals if they bring in their report cards. If it's a good one, he'll make a copy and put it on the all-star wall. If it's bad, as long as they own up to it and promise to do better, he'll still give them a meal.
It's gonna take about 15 minutes, he says.
That means sit and wait till your number is called. We find a table next to some white guys. You rarely see white people in Garden Heights, but when you do, they're usually at Reuben's. The men watch the news on the box TV in the corner of the ceiling. I munch on some of Kenya's hot Cheetos. They would taste much better with cheese sauce on them. Has there been anything on the news about Khalil? She pays more attention to her phone.
Yeah, like I watch the news. I think I saw something on Twitter, though.
I wait. Between a story about a bad car accident on the freeway
and a garbage bag of live puppies that was found in a park, there's a short story about an officer-involved shooting that is being investigated. They don't even say Khalil's name.
Some bullshit.
We get our food and head back to the store. Right as we cross the street, a gray BMW pulls up beside us, bass thumping inside like the car has a heartbeat. The driver's side window rolls down, smoke drifts out, and the male 300-pound version of Kenya smiles at us.
What up, Queens?
Kenya leans in through the window and kisses his cheek. Hey, Daddy.
Hey, Star Star,
he says.
Not gonna say hey to your uncle?
You ain't my uncle, I wanna say. You ain't shit to me. And if you touch my brother again, I'll... Hey, King, I finally mumble. His smile fades like he hears my thoughts. He puffs on a cigar and blows smoke from the corner of his mouth. Two tears are tattooed under his left eye. Two lives he's taken, at least.
I see y'all been to Reuben's. Here.
He holds out two fat rolls of money.
Make up for whatever y'all spent.
Kenya takes one easily, but I'm not touching that dirty money. No thanks.
Go on, Queen. King winks. Take some money from your godfather. Nah, she good,
Daddy says. He walks toward us. Daddy leans against the car window so he's eye level with King and gives him one of those guy handshakes with so many movements you wonder how they remember it.
Big Mav,
Kenya's dad says with a grin.
What up, King?
Don't call me that shit.
Daddy doesn't say it loudly or angrily, but in the same way I would tell somebody not to put onions or mayo on my burger. Daddy once told me that King's parents named him after the same gang he later joined, and that's why a name is important. It defines you. King became a King Lord when he took his first breath.
I was just giving my goddaughter some pocket change, King says. I heard what happened to her little homie. That's fucked up. Yeah, you know how it is,
Daddy says.
Popo shoot first, ask questions later.
No doubt, they worse than us sometimes.
King chuckles.
But hey, on some business shit. I got a package coming, need somewhere to keep it. Got too many eyes on Aisha's house.
I already told you that shit ain't going down here.
King rubs his beard.
Oh, okay. So, folks get out the game, forget where they come from. Forget that if it wasn't for my money, they wouldn't have their little store.
And if it wasn't for me, you'd be locked up. 3 years, state pen. Remember that shit? I don't owe you nothing.
Daddy leans onto the window and says,
but if you touch 7 again, I'll owe you an ass whooping. Remember that. Now that you done moved back in with his mama.
King sucks his teeth.
Kenya, get in the car.
But Daddy...
I said, get your ass in the car.
Kenya mumbles bye to me. She goes around to the passenger side and hops in.
Aight, Big Mav. So it's like that?
King says. Daddy straightens up.
It's exactly like that.
Aight, then. You just make sure your ass don't get out of line. Ain't no telling what I'll do.
The BMW peels out. 4. That night, Natasha tries to convince me to follow her to the fire hydrant, and Khalil begs for me to go for a ride with him. I force a smile, my lips trembling, and tell them I can't hang out. They keep asking, and I keep saying no. Darkness crawls toward them. I try to warn them, but my voice doesn't work. The shadow swallows them up in an instant. Now it creeps toward me. I back away. only to find it behind me. I wake up. My clock glows with the numbers 11:05. I suck in deep breaths. Sweat glues my tank top and basketball shorts to my skin. Sirens scream nearby, and Bricks and other dogs bark in response. Sitting on the side of my bed, I rub my face as if that'll wipe the nightmare away. No way I can go back to sleep, not if it means seeing them again. My throat is lined with sandpaper and aches for water. When my feet touch the cold floor, goosebumps pop up all over me. Daddy always has the air conditioning on high in the spring and summer, turning the house into a meat locker. The rest of us shiver our butts off, but he enjoys it, saying, "A little cold never hurt nobody." A lie. I drag myself down the hall. Halfway to the kitchen, I hear Mama say, "Why can't they wait? She just saw one of her best friends die. She doesn't need to relive that right now." I stop. Light from the kitchen stretches into the hallway.
"We have to investigate, Lisa," says a second voice, Uncle Carlos, Mama's older brother. "We want the truth as much as anyone."
"You mean y'all want to justify what that pig did?" Daddy says. "Investigate my ass."
"Maverick, don't make this something it's not," Uncle Carlos says.
"A 16-year-old black boy is dead because a white cop killed him. What else could it be?"
"Shh," Mama hisses. "Keep it down. Star had the hardest time falling asleep." Uncle Carlos says something, but it's too low for me to hear. I inch closer.
"This isn't about black or white," he says.
"Bullshit," says Daddy. "If this was out in Riverton Hills and his name was Richie, we wouldn't be having this conversation."
"I heard he was a drug dealer," says Uncle Carlos.
"And that makes it okay?" Daddy asks.
"I didn't say it did, but it could explain Brian's decision if he felt threatened."
A no lodges in my throat. Aching to be yelled out, Khalil wasn't a threat that night. And what made the cop think he was a drug dealer? Wait, Brian? That's 115's name?
"Oh, so you know him," Daddy mocks. "I ain't surprised.
He's a colleague, yes, and a good guy, believe it or not. I'm sure this is hard on him. Who knows what he was thinking at the time?"
"You said it yourself. He thought Khalil was a drug dealer," Daddy says. "A thug. Why he assumed that, though? What, by looking at Khalil? Explain that, detective."
Silence.
"Why was she even in the car with a drug dealer?" Uncle Carlos asks. "Lisa, I keep telling you, you need to move her and Sakani out of this neighborhood. It's poisonous."
"I've been thinking about it."
"And we're not going anywhere,"
Daddy says.
"Maverick, she's seen two of her friends get killed," Mama says. "Two. And she's only 16.
"And one was at the hands of a person who was supposed to protect her. What, you think if you live next door to them, they'll treat you different?"
"Why does it always have to be about race with you?" Uncle Carlos asks. "Other races aren't killing us nearly as much as we're killing ourselves."
"Negro, please. If I kill Tyrone, I'm going to prison. If a cop kills me, he's getting put on leave. Maybe."
"You know what? There's no point in having this conversation with you," Uncle Carlos says. "Will you at least consider letting Star speak to the detectives handling the case?"
"We should probably get her an attorney first, Carlos," Mama says.
"That's not necessary right now," he says.
"And it wasn't necessary for that cop to pull the trigger," says Daddy. "You really think we gonna let them talk to our daughter and twist her words around because she doesn't have a lawyer?"
"Nobody's going to twist her words around. I told you, we want the truth to come out too."
"Oh, we know the truth, and that's not what we want,"
says Daddy. We want justice.
Uncle Carlos sighs.
Lisa, the sooner she talks to the detectives, the better. It will be a simple process. All she has to do is answer some questions. That's it. No need to spend money to get an attorney just yet.
Frankly, Carlos, we don't want anyone to know Star was there, Mama says. She's scared. I am too. Who knows what's going to happen?
I get that, but I assure you she'll be protected. If you don't trust the system, can you at least trust me?
I don't know, says Daddy.
Can we? You know what, Maverick? I've just about had it with you. You can get out my house then. It wouldn't even be your house if it wasn't for me and my mom.
Y'all stop, Mama says. I shift my weight, and goddamn if the floor doesn't creak, which is like sounding an alarm. Mama glances around the kitchen doorway and down the hall, straight at me. Star, baby, what you doing up? Now I have no choice but to go to the kitchen. The three of them are sitting around the table, my parents in their pajamas, and Uncle Carlos in some sweats and a hoodie.
Hey, baby girl, he says. We didn't wake you up, did we?
No, I say, sitting next to Mama. I was already awake. Nightmares. All of them look sympathetic, even though I didn't say it for sympathy. I kinda hate sympathy. What are you doing here? I ask Uncle Carlos.
Sakani has a stomach bug and begged me to bring him home. And your uncle was just getting ready to leave,
Daddy adds. Uncle Carlos's jaw twitches. His face has gotten rounder since he made detective. He has Mama's high yellow complexion, as Nana calls it. And when he gets mad, his face turns deep red, like it is now.
I'm sorry about Khalil, baby girl, he says. I was just telling your parents how the detectives would like for you to come in and answer a few questions. But you don't have to do it if you don't wanna,
Daddy says.
You know what?
Uncle Carlos begins. Stop, please, says Mama. She looks at me. Munch, do you want to talk to the cops? I swallow. I wish I could say yes, but I don't know. On one hand, it's the cops. It's not like I'll be telling just anybody. On the other hand, it's the cops. One of them killed Khalil. But Uncle Carlos is a cop, and he wouldn't ask me to do something that would hurt me. Will it help Khalil get justice? I ask. Uncle Carlos nods.
It will.
Will 115 be there?
Who?
The officer. That's his badge number, I say. I remember it.
Oh, no. He won't be there, I promise. It'll be okay.
Uncle Carlos's promises are guarantees. Sometimes even more than my parents. He never uses that word unless he absolutely means it. Okay, I say. I'll do it.
Thank you.
Uncle Carlos comes over and gives me two kisses to my forehead, the way he's done since he used to tuck me in.
Lisa, just bring her after school on Monday. It shouldn't take too long.
Mama gets up and hugs him. Thank you. She walks him down the hall toward the front door. Be safe, okay? And text me when you get home.
Yes, ma'am. Sounded like our mama, he teases.
Whatever. You just better text me.
Okay, okay. Good night.
Mama comes back to the kitchen, pulling her robe together. Munch. Your father and I are visiting Ms. Rosalie in the morning instead of going to church. You're welcome to come if you want.
Yeah, Daddy says. And ain't no uncle pressuring you to go.
Mama cuts him a quick glare, then turns to me. So, you think you're up for it, Star? Talking to Ms. Rosalie may be harder than talking to the cops, honestly. but I owe it to Khalil to pay his grandmother a visit. She may not even know I was a witness to the shooting. If she somehow does and wants to know what happened, more than anybody, she has the right to ask. Yeah, I'll go.
We better find her an attorney before she talks to the detectives,
Daddy says. Maverick, Mama sighs. If Carlos doesn't think it's necessary just yet, I trust his judgment. Plus, I'll be with her the entire time.
Good thing somebody trusts his judgment,
says Daddy.
And you really been thinking again about moving? We discussed this already.
Maverick, I'm not going there with you tonight.
How we gonna change anything around here if we...
Maverick, she says through gritted teeth. Whenever Mama breaks a name down like that, you better hope it's not yours. I said, I'm not going there tonight. She side-eyes him, waiting for the comeback. There isn't one. Try and get some sleep, baby, she tells me and kisses my cheek before going to their room. Daddy goes to the refrigerator.
You want some grapes?
Yeah. How come you and Uncle Carlos always fighting?
'Cause he a buster.
He joins me at the table with a bowl of white grapes.
But for real, he ain't never liked me. Thought I was a bad influence on your mama. Lisa was wild when I met her, though, like all them other Catholic school girls.
I bet he was more protective of Mama than Seven is with me, huh?
Oh, yeah, he says. Carlos acted like he was Lisa's daddy. When I got locked up, he moved y'all in with him and blocked my calls. Even took her to a divorce attorney. He grins. Still couldn't get rid of me.
I was 3 when Daddy went in prison, 6 when he got out. A lot of my memories include him, but a lot of my firsts don't. First day of school, the first time I lost a tooth, the first time I rode a bike without training wheels. In those memories, Uncle Carlos's face is where Daddy's should have been. I think that's the real reason they're always fighting. Daddy drums the mahogany surface of the dining table, making a thump, thump, thump beat.
The nightmares will go away after a while, he says. They're always the worst right after.
That's how it was with Natasha. How many people have you seen die?
Enough. Worst one was my cousin Andre.
His finger seems to instinctively trace the tattoo on his forearm, an A with a crown over it.
A drug deal turned into a robbery, and he got shot in the head twice, right in front of me. A few months before you were born, in fact. That's why I named you Star.
He gives me a small smile.
My light during all that darkness.
Daddy chomps on some grapes.
Don't be scared about Monday. Tell the cops the truth. And don't let them put words in your mouth. God gave you a brain, you don't need theirs. And remember that you didn't do nothing wrong. The cop did. Don't let them make you think otherwise.
Something's bugging me. I wanted to ask Uncle Carlos, but I couldn't for some reason. Daddy's different, though. While Uncle Carlos somehow keeps impossible promises, Daddy keeps it real with me. You think the cops want Khalil to have justice? I ask.
Thump, thump, thump. Thump, thump, thump.
The truth casts a shadow over the kitchen. People like us in situations like this become hashtags, but they rarely get justice. I think we all wait for that one time, though, that one time, when it ends right. Maybe this can be it.
I don't know,
Daddy says.
I guess we'll find out.
Sunday morning, we pull up to a small yellow house. Bright flowers bloom below the front porch. I used to sit with Khalil on that porch. My parents and I hop out the truck. Daddy carries a foil-covered pan of lasagna that Mama made. Sakani claims he's still not feeling good, so he stayed home. Seven's there with him. I don't buy this sick act, though. Sakani always gets some kind of bug right as spring break ends. Going up Miss Rosalie's walkway floods me with memories. I have scars tattooed on my arms and legs from falls on this concrete. One time I was on my scooter and Khalil pushed me off because I hadn't given him a turn. When I got up, skin was missing from most of my knee. I never screamed so loud in my life. We played hopscotch and jumped rope on this walkway, too. Khalil never wanted to play at first, talking about how those were girls' games. He always gave in when me and Natasha said the winner got a freeze cup, frozen Kool-Aid in a styrofoam cup, or a pack of Nihilators, a.k.a. Now and Laters. Ms. Rosalie was the neighborhood candy lady. I was at her house almost as much as I was at my own. Mama and Ms. Rosalie's youngest daughter, Tammy, were best friends growing up. When Mama got pregnant with me, she was in her senior year of high school, and Nana put her out the house. Ms. Rosalie took her in until my parents eventually got an apartment of their own. Mama says Ms. Rosalie was one of her biggest supporters and cried at her high school graduation like it was her own daughter walking across the stage. 3 years later, Ms. Rosalie saw Mama and me at Wyatt's. This was way before it became our store. She asked my mom how college was going. Mama told her that with Daddy in prison, she couldn't afford daycare, and that Nana wouldn't take care of me because I wasn't her baby, and therefore I wasn't her problem. So Mama was thinking about dropping out. Ms. Rosalie told her to bring me to her house the next day, and that she better not say a word about paying her. She babysat me and later Sakani the whole time Mama was in school. Mama knocks on the door, rattling the screen. Miss Tammy answers in a head wrap, t-shirt, and sweatpants. She unhooks the locks, hollering back, "Maverick, Lisa, and Star here, Ma!" The living room looks just like it did when Khalil and I played hide-and-seek in it. There's still plastic on the sofa and recliner. If you sit on them too long in the summer while wearing shorts, the plastic nearly glues to your legs. "Hey, Tammy girl," Mama says, and they hug long and hard. "How you doing?" "I'm hanging in there." Miss Tammy hugs Daddy, then me. "Just hate that this is the reason I had to come home." It's so weird looking at Miss Tammy. She looks the way Khalil's mama, Miss Brenda, would look if Miss Brenda wasn't on crack. A lot like Khalil. Same hazel eyes and dimples. One time Khalil said he wished Miss Tammy was his mama instead, so he could live in New York with her. I used to joke and tell him she didn't have time for him. I wish I never said that.
"Where you want me to put this lasagna, Tim?"
Daddy asks her.
"In the refrigerator if you can find room," she says, as he heads toward the kitchen. "Mama said folks brought food all day yesterday. They were still bringing it when I got here last night. Seems like the whole neighborhood has stopped by."
"That's the garden for you," Mama says. "If folks can't do anything else, they'll cook."
"You ain't ever lied,"
Miss Tammy motions to the sofa.
"Y'all have a seat."
Mama and I sit down, and Daddy comes back and joins us. Miss Tammy takes the recliner that Miss Rosalie usually sits in. She gives me a sad smile.
"Star, you know, you sure have grown since the last time I saw you. You and Khalil both grew up, so..."
Her voice cracks. Mama reaches over and pats her knee. Miss Tammy takes a deep breath and smiles at me again.
"It's good to see you, baby."
"We know Miss Rosalie gonna tell us she fine, Tam,"
Daddy says.
"But how's she really doing?"
"We're taking one day at a time. The chemo's working, thankfully. I hope I can convince her to move in with me. That way I can make sure she's getting her prescriptions."
She sighs through her nose.
I had no idea Mama was struggling like she was. I didn't even know she'd lost her job. You know how she is, never want to ask for help.
What about Miss Brenda? I ask. I have to. Khalil would have.
I don't know, Star. Bren, that's complicated. We haven't seen her since we got the news. Don't know where she is. If we do find her, though, I don't know what we'll do.
I can help you find a rehab facility near you, Mama says. She's gotta wanna get clean, though.
Miss Tammy nods, and that's the problem. But I think this will either push her to finally get help or push her over the edge. I hope it's the former.
Cameron holds his grandma's hand as he leads her into the living room, like she's the queen of the world in a house coat. She looks thinner, but strong for somebody going through chemo and all of this. A scarf wrapped around her head adds to her majesty, an African queen, and we're blessed to be in her presence. The rest of us stand. Mama hugs Cameron and kisses one of his chubby cheeks. Khalil called him Chipmunk because of them, but he'd check anybody stupid enough to call his little brother fat. Daddy gives Cameron a palm slap that ends in a hug.
What's up, man? You okay?
Yes, sir. A big wide smile spreads across Ms. Rosalie's face. She holds her arms out, and I walk into the most heartfelt hug I've ever gotten from somebody who's not related to me. There's not any sympathy in it either, just love and strength. I guess she knows I need some of both.
My baby, she says.
She pulls back and looks at me, tears brimming in her eyes.
Went and grew up on me.
She hugs my parents, too. Miss Tammy lets her have the recliner. Miss Rosalie pats the end of the sofa closest to her, so I sit there. She holds my hand and rubs her thumb along the top of it. She says. It's like my hand is telling her a story and she's responding. She listens to it for a while, then says,
I'm so glad you came over. I've been wanting to talk to you.
Yes, ma'am, I say what I'm supposed to.
You were the very best friend that boy ever had.
This time, I can't say what I'm supposed to. Ms. Rosalie, we weren't as close.
I don't care, baby, she says. Khalil never had another friend like you. I know that for a fact.
I swallow. Yes, ma'am.
The police told me you were the one with him when it happened.
So she knows. Yes, ma'am. I'm standing on a track, watching the train barrel toward me, and I tense up and wait for the impact, the moment she asks what happened. But the train shifts to another track.
Maverick, he wanted to talk to you. He wanted your help.
Daddy straightens up.
For real?
Uh-huh. He was selling that stuff.
Something leaves me. I mean, I kind of figured it, but to know it's the truth, this hurts. But I swear I want to cuss Khalil out. How could he sell the very stuff that took his mama from him? Did he realize that he was taking somebody else's mama from them? Did he realize that if he does become a hashtag, some people will only see him as a drug dealer? He was so much more than that.
But he wanted to stop, Miss Rosalie says. He told me, Grandma, I can't stay in this. Mr. Maverick said it only leads to two things, the grave or prison. And I ain't trying to see either. He respected you, Maverick, a lot. You were the father he never had.
I can't explain it, but something leaves Daddy, too. His eyes dim, and he nods. Mama rubs his back.
Now, I tried to talk some sense into him, Ms. Rosalie says. But this neighborhood makes young men deaf to the elders. The money part didn't help. He was going around here paying bills, buying sneakers and mess. But I know he remembered the things you told him over the years, Maverick, and that gave me a lot of faith. I keep thinking if only he had another day or...
Miss Rosalie covers her trembling lips. Miss Tammy starts for her, but she says,
I'm okay, Tam.
She looks at me.
I'm happy he wasn't alone, but I'm even happier you were with him. That's all I need to know. Don't need details, nothing else. Knowing you were with him is good enough.
Like Daddy, all I can do is nod. But as I hold Khalil's grandma's hand, I see the anguish in her eyes. His little brother can't smile anymore. So what if people end up thinking he was a thug and never care? We care. Khalil matters to us, not the stuff he did. Forget everybody else. Mama leans across me and sets an envelope in Ms. Rosalie's lap. We want you to have that. Ms. Rosalie opens it, and I catch a glimpse of a whole lot of money inside.
What in the world? Y'all know I can't take this.
Yes, you can, Daddy says. We ain't forgot how you kept Star and Sakani for us. We weren't about to let you be empty-handed.
And we know y'all are trying to pay for the funeral, Mama says. Hopefully that'll help. Plus, we're raising money around the neighborhood, too. So don't you worry about a thing. Ms. Rosalie wipes a new set of tears from her eyes.
I'm gonna pay y'all back every penny.
Did we say you had to pay us back?
Daddy asks.
You focus on getting better, all right? And if you give us any money, we giving it right back. God's my witness.
There are a lot more tears and hugs. Ms. Rosalie gives me a freeze cup for the road, red syrup glistening on the top. She always makes them extra sweet. As we leave, I remember how Khalil used to run up to the car when I was about to go. The sun shining on the grease lines that separated his cornrows. The glimmer in his eyes would be just as bright. He'd knock on the window, I'd let it down, and he'd say with a snaggletooth grin, "See you later, alligator." Back then I'd giggle behind my own snaggle teeth. Now I tear up. Goodbyes hurt the most when the other person's already gone. I imagine him standing at my window and I smile, for his sake. After a while, crocodile.